Hey everybody, welcome to a show. I'm Pete, I'm the host, by which I mean I talk and you listen. what a great setup for you, you dope. Well, I have a topic for this show because I did something. I did something to myself, and so that gave me fodder for this show. We'll circle back around to that. This is like a full circle story. That's sort of being woven before your eyes, okay? I'm kind of what you call a story weaver now. I'm not just like some idiot doing a podcast. I'm a weaver of tales. A blackjack dealer, but instead of cards, I give you scenarios. So as you may know, I have a gym in my garage. And when I say I have a gym in my garage, I mean I have weights and a squat cage and a bench. And that's basically it. I did build a deadlifting platform because so for a long time, my the hard thing about deadlifting is as it gets heavier, even when you try and set it down fairly gently, which I do because I don't want to fuck up any equipment or whatever. But you do get concerned on a concrete floor because you've got these metal plates that are hitting a concrete floor and you're like, that's not going to be good over time. My original solution to this was a mat. So they give you, you know, these mats that you stand on that are supposed to be like anti-fatigue mats, I think they call them. And I had one that was exceptionally thick. And I was like, you know, I could cut this in half. That's where the plates will hit. And I think that'll solve my problem. And I deadlifted up to quite an amount using that system. And, you know, it worked. So that's what I did. But as things got heavier, and also I was like, I feel like, Pete, you're playing a dangerous game here with your landlord's concrete garage floor. Now, I know some people are probably like, yeah, fuck it. You don't own it. Like, just destroy it. But that's not really the attitude I take towards the places I live because I feel like, well, I don't own it and I'm not going to live here forever. But if I'd taken that attitude from the moment I moved in, I would be like, well, this place has been trashed for like 4 years. I lived here for 1 year where it was nice and it's been trashed for four. I feel like I made a mistake. You know what I mean? I think that's my tip for fellow serial renters like me. I know it's kind of a pain in the ass, but like when you move into somewhere, I think it's a bad idea to go with the attitude of like, this is extremely temporary. So I'm not going to make it homey. I'm not going to treat it like the place where I live. I'm just going to kind of, you know, I'm not going to unpack anything or hang anything on the wall. Because what ends up happening is if you make that choice, that's almost the best way to guarantee that you will be in that house for 15 years. So anyway, I built a deadlift platform, which sounds fancy, but it is like two rubber mats and four pieces of plywood and screwed together. But then there's three sections. There's the two ends, which have the rubber on them. That's where the weight hits. And there are the center section, which is just two pieces of plywood. And they are not attached so that I can take the entire thing and put it up against the wall. You know, because since it's my garage, I like to park a car there sometimes. Not all the time. I'm not too worried about it at this juncture because my car is well old enough to drink alcohol at this point. So, you know, when you're driving that, it's not like I'm like, yeah, fuck it, it's a piece of crap, but I'm also not like super precious about it. So, you know, I like to be able to park in there when I can. It's nice in the winter. This is the first place I've owned or lived in, really, that had like a good garage. Poonmaster Flex and I rented a house once that had a garage, but the problem was it was separate from the house. Also, it was like a shack piece of shit. But it was separate from the house. And so, you had to walk through the backyard to get to the garage, which wouldn't have been a huge deal, except that A, when it snows or something, it's like, well, having a garage doesn't spare you walking through the snow. And you walk through the snow and then you're in your garage. So you're like kicking the snow off your feet and stuff, but you're like, well, it's just going in the garage. But B, our downstairs neighbors had, dogs. And they weren't extra on top of picking up the dog shit. And also sometimes you'd go out in the morning and I'd be like, here's my cup of coffee and here's my like headphone cord dangling from my ears and stuff. And the dog would be out there and, you know, it would jump up on you and stuff. And I was like, okay. So this, we had a garage, but it was also like there was a, it wasn't quite the same as having a garage that like you park inside and then you're inside. Do you know what I mean? You don't have to go outside. So anyway, I like to park in there in the winter sometimes. It's like a nice luxury. This is also like the first place where I've not had shared laundry. This is, you know, this was moving on up for me. Even though it's a rental and not something we own, I'm still pretty proud of myself here. Anyway, so I work out in the garage and Pete's Pumpkin Patch, as I like to call it. And the pump part of Pumpkin Patch is all capitalized. See, because you get like a pump. Also, because I've always wanted to own and operate a pumpkin patch. And I was like, well, maybe you should call your gym that. And then also, when and if you get a real pumpkin patch, you can call it the same thing. And that'll be really confusing. And that's great. You know, every October, there's just a bunch of people slowly driving by my garage, wondering, surely this is not where the pumpkin patch is. But this is what Google Maps keeps telling me. Anyway, so the other day, I'm down there, and I need to talk a little bit about a fitness goal that I've had. And I don't want to overdo this goal because it's not, I find talking about this part of things boring. Because I think when, I don't know, I just do. So but I've been trying to do this thing called 1,000-pound club. And what you do is a grand total of a one rep max for your squat, deadlift, and bench. And you try and do them all in a row, like the same day. And the total weight for that is 1,000 pounds. So, you know, however you want to divide it up among those three, goes to 1,000. This is a goal I've been pursuing pretty hard for about 2 years. And then there's probably a third year in there too of like, I was weightlifting and strength training more concentrating on that than, you know, I'd been a runner for a long time and was doing that. But this was like more trying to actually get as strong as possible. So, like 3 years, we'll call it, and I was getting real close, right? Because so the numbers I was trying to get were squat 340, bench press 260, and deadlift 400. And the squat was the hard one. That was the one that was testing me the most, or you know, the one that I was the diciest on, as far as I'd done a deadlift at 280 before, or a 380, I'm sorry. I'd done a bench press at 250 or 255. But the squat, you know, going into this last round, I think my record was 305. So still pretty good distance from where I needed to be. Hang on 1 second. So, I figured, okay, I can do this. You know, I did think I could do it, right? I did think this is within reach. This is a reasonable thing to do. Let's do this. You know what I mean? So I was training, and then I've had some setbacks. I tore my hamstring a couple times. One time I tore it, you know, but I could kind of keep going, so I did. That was probably a mistake, and I tore it for real. I think it was last summer. It was either last summer or the summer before. It doesn't really matter. But I tore it so bad that, you know, I couldn't do anything. Like, being seated was uncomfortable, right? I drove into work, which for me is maybe a 5-minute drive, probably not. And it was like, I was sweating by the time I got there. I got to work and they were doing road work right in front of our building. So it was a one-way street, but you know, where you had to stop and wait, but I had to stop and wait 25 feet from where I would turn in to go into our building. So I'm sitting there waiting and it's like right there. And I was like, this construction guy has no idea how much pain I'm in. Because sitting in the car was the worst, the way I was leaned and whatever. So anyway, but you know, that sucked. And like, it was pretty high on the pain level. Like putting my shoes on, I would, again, be sweating. And I was like, all right, when it's time to put my shoes on, I need to give myself like 10 minutes to kind of grit through and do it. And I would be sweaty by the time I was done because I was just like, oof, that was painful. So on the scale of pain, hamstring was pretty high. You know, when they ask you, you go to like the hospital or whatever, and they're like, what are you, a 1 to 10? And I've learned to just sort of answer. But really, it's a dumb thing because I'm like, well, I should like be able to tell them my personal scale, right? Because like, I think I'm still stuck on the most painful thing I've ever experienced was when I had this thing in my mouth called an anterior open bite splint. And it was like wearing the top half of a mouthpiece. And they kind of cemented in, but then it's also attached with sort of springs to what they call temporary anchor devices, TADs. And what those are screws. And they put the screws through your gum into your jawbone. And that kind of like applies the pressure. Getting it installed wasn't that bad. But one time I went for an appointment and the orthodontist was like, what I need to do is back this screw out and then put it in at an angle because I need more pressure on it. And he was like, so we can numb you up. But he's like, it'll probably take about 30 seconds. So if I numb you up, you're going to be numb for like 5-6 hours, or we could just, you know, fucking do it. And I was like, all right. Basically, I guess I was foolishly or naively thinking, well, he wouldn't offer that to me if it was going to be like outrageously painful, right? And it was outrageously painful. You know how like when you have a sinus infection or something, like your teeth ache and shit like that. I mean, it was like that times a million, you know, getting stabbed. It was the most painful thing I've ever experienced. Second on the list is I have this occasional thing. I don't know what they call it. It's got a fancy name, but basically it's this pain that if you look up, you know, it's a pain where it basically feels like someone's stabbing a knife into your asshole. And that is super painful. And they're like, hey, we don't really know what causes it and like how to fix it. Not exactly. But what sucks about it, too, is it can go on for hours and it's like really painful. And all I really can do when that happens is kind of walk around and just wait, you know, and I try to distract myself or something, but that doesn't really work. You can try and take something like a pill or something, but the thing is, it takes at least an hour for something like that to kick in. And then I think it doesn't usually seem to work for me. I used to get this in the morning a lot. And so then I have this very distinct memory of living in the studio apartment. And it was the summer, but I had the AC running. And like I was just in pain, so I would just lay on the floor because it was cool and, like, you know, I would feel nauseated. It was kind of like getting kicked in the balls and stabbed in the asshole and just, like, all everything combined. And, you know, when I would get it in the morning like that, though, it usually only lasted for, like, maybe 10 or 15 minutes. And I remember there were a couple times I had it, and then, like, I came out of it, you know, and it's what's weird, too, is it clears instantly. Like, the second it's over, it just, like, lifts immediately. And so I just remember it being over one time in particular, and I was, like, laying on the floor in a pool of sweat. And then, you know, I started getting cold because I was like, oh, I'm wet and sweaty. But, you know, the AC is on full blast in this studio where I kept it on full blast all the time. And I just had this, like, euphoric kind of feeling for the rest of the day. Like, I felt great after I overcame it. It wasn't like psychologically I felt great. It was like physically. I just felt amazing. I guess I was like, well, that almost killed me, but now I feel fine. What an amazing transition. You know what I mean? Like, my body was just sort of euphoric because it was like, we thought we were dying and we're fine. I don't know. I don't know how else to describe it. So anyway, I had that going on for a long time, and it's gotten less frequent. I've, you know, found some ways to try and mitigate it, I think. But that's second place for me. And then third place pain for me is when I got gum surgeries. So they scrape the top of the roof of your mouth. They take that tissue and sew it on the side. And then it grows back in. And it's, so if you have gum recession, it fixes it. That was, like, not immediate pain, but more, you know, it lasts for, like, a couple weeks of pretty bad pain. And just doesn't really let up for quite a while. So, you know, I haven't been shot or something, you know, like, knock on wood. I haven't had, like, anything super terrible, in my opinion. But I've had some pretty painful experiences. So Thursday night, about a week ago, I'm out there and I'm supposed to do my deadlift workout. And the progression was each lift was going up by 5 pounds a week. And so I was supposed to do 380 pounds. And, you know, I was debating at that point, like, at some point, because I was doing one set of 5 deadlifts, right? And I was like, at some point, you got to go for it. And you keep getting injured as you get close. And so maybe you have to weigh. Okay, so I've got 20 pounds left to go. That's 4 weeks if I just kept on this normal progression. But maybe I lessen the risks if I do it for 2 weeks and get within 10 pounds and then take a 10-pound jump. Especially because if it's 400 pounds, a 10-pound jump is not a huge jump proportion or percentage-wise. You know what I mean? It's a pretty small, what does that end up being, like a 2.5%? Jump, not too bad. So, you know, I was thinking about all this stuff, whatever, and I'm unloading weights from the weight tree I have, and a 45-pound plate, I got it off the weight tree, but it just fell from the weight tree onto my big toe, just like directly. The edge of the plate just hit my big toe, instant pain. Horrible pain. Very, very painful. I don't, you know, in that instant, I don't know if I'd put it in the top three that I just described, but probably, well, it would probably knock the gum surgery pain down a notch, right? So it's in the top three. This was like happening. I was initially loading the bar, so I hadn't done anything yet. Now, I'm wearing shoes because I'm not a fucking idiot. So, you know, I was like, well, my toe's not cut off. Like, and I could move my toe in my shoe. So I was like, oh, that seems okay. It hurt like hell. But, you know, you know how, like, when you wrap your shin on something? Because it also did hit my shin because it, it fell on my toe and then tilted and hit me in the shin. and my shin hurt quite a little bit. So, you know, and I was like, well, this hurts quite a bit, but I know this is fine. You know what I mean? This will ease up in time and probably in an hour we'll be fine. So I was like, well, you crushed your toe, but, you know, sometimes when you do something like that, you're just like, well, whatever, I'll be fine. So I went ahead and finished the workout and did the deadlift. And, you know, I did my set of five at 380, because here's the other thing. As I'm getting as close as I was getting, which is, so after doing that deadlift, I was within 60 pounds, 940 pounds, 20 pounds per lift. And I was like, well, I don't want to stop because this is as close as I've gotten. And I've made some sacrifices in my life, which don't sound like sacrifices to most people, probably. You know, I gave up. I haven't been running at all for a few months. Because I was like, you keep getting injured. I think you're trying to do too many things. Maybe you should like just chill out and just weightlift for as you get to this home stretch. Last 2 or 3 months, just let that go and just lift weights. The other thing I was doing was eating a lot. Because I was like, you know, I think if I put on 10 or 15 pounds, it'll help me recover. And I'll get a lot stronger, a lot faster if I've got a little extra weight. Because I'm generally a leaner guy. So, you know, eating more. But eating more is not, like, fun. Like, you would think it'd be fun. Because it's like, all right, well, get me a chocolate shake. But I was trying to eat, you know, things that would be helpful for me. And healthy-ish, you know, if calorically high. But I was like, hey, I wasn't trying to like just be like, well, I'll do Wendy's every day and that'll get me there, because I figured it would. But I was like, I don't know. I think you'll put on 15 pounds, but I don't know if it'll be a useful 15 pounds for you. So, you know, it's been a couple months of doing some stuff that I'm like, I don't want to do this forever. I'd rather stop doing this sooner rather than later. So, you know, that prompted me also to be like, eh, I think I'm okay. The other thing is my toe didn't really hurt as long as I was just standing. And, you know, when you're deadlifting, the weight should be over your midfoot, not on your toes, not on your heels. So I was like, well, it should be fine. So I did it. It was fine. And I put everything away and I was like, that came up surprisingly easy. And, you know, was kind of thinking like, huh, maybe you should, like, I don't know, do something that's not like biomechanically harmful to you, but is very painful. It's like, maybe you should have an orthodontist screw a screw into your gum right before you deadlift every time, because you'll be so focused on that, you know, the weight, though it is somewhat painful to lift, will seem just kind of easy. So I go inside, I take off my shoe, and I was like, oh boy. The toenail's cracked all the way across. If I'm looking down at it, it's horizontal as opposed to vertical. It's perpendicular to the length of my toe. And tons of blood, lots of blood. I found a little blood spatter in the garage, which I don't even know how that happened because I had a shoe on. But it could have been later because we went to, well, so I went inside and Poonmaster Flex was like, did you get it? How's it going? And I was like, I got the weight. That was great. And I was like, unfortunately, I did something really dumb. So I looked on the internet because I was like, is this something I should go in for? Or is this something that's just like, meh, you know, like, what are you going to do? And I was like, if this is something I should go in for, like, should I wait till tomorrow? What should I do? And basically everything was like, well, there's not a lot they can do for you, but sometimes it's helpful to go in because they might remove the toenail and or they might do some other things to sort of mitigate the damage. They'll probably also do an x-ray, so that might help you figure out how fucked up you are. And at this point, I was like, well, I don't know. Like, I know it hit my toe, but I don't know if it broke something or what. All I knew is, like, if I moved my toe up, like, to touch the top of my shoe, it was very painful. The other thing was, so, you know, I got in the shower to get cleaned up a little bit and to try and figure out, like, is it still bleeding? Is there just a lot of blood on it? And it was still bleeding kind of a lot. So, when I was in the shower, I felt a little woozy and I was like, I'm probably fine. I think it was like the come down from the adrenaline of the pain or something. I don't know. But so I was like, well, we probably better go in. Because, like, why not? You know what I mean? I'm in a position of privilege in life where I'm like, you know what? I've got the privilege of, I can go to the ER, and if everything's fine, then everything's fine. And it's not going to ruin. I'm not going to be like, well, there goes the house. So, you know, I was like, I might as well go in. Also, because, you know, I was like, hey, look, if this is something that I can make the recovery go better or faster, or maybe not need to do much recovery, that would be smart for me. So I'm going to do that. So we were like, do you go to urgent care? Do you go to the ER? And I was like, I don't know. And I just landed on going to the ER because I was like, well, this is the same facility where I see my regular doctor. You know, he's literally in the same building. It's like a whole medical center. And I was like, so they'll have all my records and shit. They have all my insurance already. You know what I mean? Like, all that's good to go. So let's just do that. So we go in. You know, you have to go through a metal detector, which was guarded by this lady in a security guard uniform, who I remember from my days working in the library. And I was like, I mean, she is like maybe a great grandma at this point. It always is weird to me when a security guard is somebody who is, you know, like, they're not intimidating. But then sometimes I'm like, well, maybe a security guard is sort of like, you know how they say the locks on your doors keep honest people honest. In other words, as long as you have your door closed and locked, most people probably aren't going to bother trying to steal your shit. But if you just had no front door, someone who might not otherwise try to steal your shit might, because they're like, eh, you know, this is a little bit easy. I'm not passing it up. So maybe that's how grandma's security guards work. I don't know. I don't know if I don't know that there's an actual philosophy. It could have also been like, so this was Thursday at probably 7:30 p.m. So, you know, that might not exactly be jump in hospital time. So they're like, you know, we can let our beefy security guards, let's have them on the weekend, Friday night from 5 till, you know, 5 in the morning or whatever. That's when we have a big beefy dude with, you know, sleeve tattoos who's sitting there on his smartphone, and his smartphone looks like a fucking Tic Tac box in his hand. And that's who we need at that time. Because when, you know, drunken idiots are coming in and they got punched in the face and a glass broke over their head or something and they're all rowdy and shit, that's who we want here. There was also a guy who I guess I can only describe as sort of a concierge. He was like, do you guys need anything to drink? Or, well, he offered it to Poon Master Flex, not to me, I guess, because that's probably the way it works. Do you need a blanket or anything and whatever? He was very nice. Augie was his name because he was an old man. So he needed a classic old man name. It was just so funny because I was like, I totally get what this guy's doing. And I think this guy really enjoys this. I have no problem with it. But I was like, this seems like the last thing I would want to do with like my life is be this person in the ER who's like trying to just make it a more pleasant environment. I don't know why I was just like, I wasn't at my best self. Okay. I didn't say anything to him like fuck you or something. You know, I just was thinking about it and was just like, I wonder how do you get into this gig or something? I don't know. So we go in and, you know, I'm in a room because you go from the waiting room to a smaller waiting room. And it was pretty funny because they had a board and there were only a couple other people there. And I did feel like kind of an idiot because I was like, I'm going to the ER. And I was like, I'm going to show up and be like, I hurt my little toesy. And everybody else there is going to be like, I think I'm having a heart attack. or like, you know, a, there was a 10 car pile up or something. You know what I mean? It's like my little toe kind of hurts. And yeah. So anyway, I'm in the smaller room and Moonmaster Flex is like, so they have a board out there that says, you know, the patient's names and who's in here. And she's like, there's only like three people in here and you're one of them. And she's like, do you know what it says under your name? And I was like, no. And she says, toe pain. So I was in the, you know, ER for toe pain. And I was picturing the doctor like looks up at it and is like, wow, okay. It seems really important. And maybe we need to discuss with him what emergency is. You know, but I was like, where do you go? Because I'm like, emergency room, urgent care. And I'm like, well, emergency, urgent, you know, I was like, I don't know. I wouldn't call this an emergency, no. But, you know, it's urgent for me, urgent, but relative to the things people are experiencing. Anyway, you get where I'm going, right? There's no appropriate place to go when you smashed your toe. I was still bleeding quite a bit. And so, you know, the nurse comes in and does the normal shit of like, what are you allergic to? And blah, blah, blah. And like, what did you do? And was like, what's your pain scale? And I was like, I don't know, 5? Said it with kind of a question mark. She was like, how much do you weigh? And I was like, maybe 185. And she's like, you don't seem sure. And she was like a little exasperated that I didn't know how much I weigh. Which, first of all, I was like, this is what you guys do every fucking time somebody comes into the doctor's office. You're not going to weigh me now. But I was like, well, it's probably between 185 and 190. And she was like, how do you not know? And I was like, well, we don't have a scale in the house. But I've been trying to gain a little weight. So, you know, I don't know how successful I've been. But anyway, I was just like, isn't a 5-pound range pretty good, though? Like, I know within 5 pounds. That's pretty close. Wasn't like I was like, I have no idea how much I weigh. And she's like, you don't know how much you weigh. So you might weigh 90, you might weigh 290. I was like, I don't know, between 185 and 190, or yeah, 185, 190. Anyway, but then she left and then a guy comes in. And he's kind of a younger guy. And he explains that he's a med student. And so he's, you know, going to be taking care of me today. And I was like, all right, fine. So he looks at it. And then he's just basically was like asking me the same questions, you know. And then he was like, okay, do you have any family history? And, you know, that question kind of was just out of nowhere. It wasn't like, do you smoke? Do you drink? Well, they asked me that 100 times. And I'm just like, guys. No. Okay. But then, you know, and I've also gotten to where, so I'll drink a beer or I'll drink 3 or 4 beers in a round of golf. You know what I mean? But other than that, I don't really drink maybe ever. Maybe I'll have a beer on a patio once every couple months. So, you know, I'm probably putting away a 6-pack twice a year at this point in total. So when they ask if I drink, I just say no, because I'm like, this isn't significant amount of drinking. I feel like the question for that is, have you ever drank? Not do you drink? Because I'm like, I don't do drinking, but I have done drinking. Or any, you know, it's kind of like when they ask about marijuana and I'm like, well, I was taking marijuana edibles for a while, like 3 years ago. And now I don't think I've had any marijuana for 2 or 3 years. And even if I did have some, it would be a small amount. And then I probably wouldn't do it again for 6 months. You know what I mean? Like, I think that answer rounds down to no. And they ask a lot about illicit drugs or something. And I was like, no, because I'm like, literally, no. Anyway, so he's like, do you have any family history? And I had to stop and be like, of what? And I stopped myself from saying of toe pain, of dropping things on my foot. Like, did my father ever drop something on his foot? Probably. Maybe. I don't know. You know, it felt like he was asking the questions. It's like, these are the questions they tell us to ask. But he wasn't, you know. And then he was like, well, family history of any other medical stuff. And I was like, no. You know, I don't know, but no. Let's say no. Is that really relevant to what's happening right now? You know what I mean? So then the x-ray lady comes in, and she's got this big wheelie x-ray thing that looks like a giraffe. It's painted for kids. And she is 100% over it. Because, so she's explaining to me, almost immediately I found out that she was on day 18 of 19, possibly 20. You know, and she was telling me how it was going to be 19 days. And then someone was like, I don't know if I can come in. Can you come in for me? And she's like, that would put it to 20 days in a row. And she was just over it. And she wasn't not nice. But I could tell, I was like, she's at the edge. You know, she is like, reasonably, right? That's too long. When I used to work in the library, I would go stretches where I worked 12 days in a row. Because if I worked a weekend, then I would take, you know, whatever. And then that got cut down to I would work 7 days in a row. And that was too much. I found out that, you know, once I worked 7 days in a row, if I didn't take the next day off, I was not in a good mood. You know what I mean? Like, just everything about you kind of suffers when you work that much. Everything about your personality and life is worse. So, you know, she's telling me about this and whatever and x-raying my foot, and I'm getting blood all over this fucking plastic thing she has. She doesn't give a flying fuck about that. But then so she sets my foot up for an x-ray and she positions the camera above it. And then the student plus another doctor come in, and this doctor is looking at my foot, and she like walks in and sticks her head between the x-ray camera and my foot, you know, to like get a look at it. And I could just see the x-ray tech lady was like about to explode. I call her an x-ray tech. I don't know. She doctor. I don't know what she was. I don't know what her job title was. I'm sorry. But I could tell she was just so fucking pissed. And because, you know, and I was like, I could tell what was going on there. It was like the doctor is coming in and the doctor needs to look at this foot, and the doctor doesn't give a fuck that you're like just set up this picture and cannot wait 10 seconds for her to take the picture. You know what I mean? Couldn't just like open the curtain, see the x-rays happening and be like, should I come back in 5? Or like, can I get a look at that? Just even say, can I take a look at that? And then the x-ray lady could either be like, sure, or be like, I'll take this quick picture. We're all set up. Then you can. So she sticks her head in. Then she goes back out with the student. And the x-ray tech lady just has this fucking look on her face. And I was like, hey, I think that lady was trying to get a free head x-ray from you. I think she was trying to get a freebie. And that lady was like, she's going to get a free zap next time if she tries that again. And then, so then the x-ray lady was like, well, looks like you might have got a fracture here, but I can't really tell. I can't blow it up on this machine. It gets all distorted. So I'll send it to the radiologist. They'll take a look. And then she left. So we saw like 10 more people. There was another time. So a guy came. We counted 7 different people, and that's not including like the admissions lady or the old man, Augie. This was like 7 different people who were like providing care. And I was like, boy, this seems kind of inefficient, but okay. An EMT came in and he's like, you know, also a pretty young guy. He's like, hi, I'm Kyle or whatever. I'm going to clean up your foot. And I was like, okay. So he starts cleaning it up. And then as he's cleaning it up, the med student comes in, and the med student was like explaining to me, he's like, okay, so it looks like you got a little fracture. And he's like, what we want to do is put a hole in the top of your toenail. And what that does is let the blood that's underneath get out. So it you know, the pressure that's building up in there is going to cause you a lot of your pain. But if we release that pressure, you should feel better. And he's like, so if you can see, and he goes to Kyle and he's like, can you stop doing that for a second so I can show him? And you could tell Kyle was pissed. And also, I was like, so what he showed me is he's like, you can see the blood collecting under the toenail. So we're going to put a hole right here. And I was like, I got it. I know what's going on down there. Like, you don't have to show me right now. You could let this guy finish what he's doing. You know what I mean? Or like, I didn't need the visual aid because I was like, you're not explaining to me something that I'm very intimately a part of this process. So I got it. You know, and I was just like, again, the doctor, let's call it doctor-staff relationship seemed dicey in, you know, this whole thing. So the doctor comes back with the med student and she's like, okay, so we're going to put a thing in the top of your foot. And she showed me the tool they were going to use. It was almost exactly like a wood burner, if you've ever used one of those. So it was this long stick with a metal thing on the end. And the metal thing wasn't sharp, but then she pushed a button and it was like instantly orange, glowing orange, hot. And she's like, we used to use like a drill kind of thing, but this works a lot better. It's fast and it's, you know, she's like, you shouldn't feel any pain because we'll just go through the nail. And as soon as we get through the nail, we should be able to tell because blood will come out. And then, so, you know, it shouldn't burn your skin or anything and whatever. And I was like, all right. Because I, you know, my consultation with Dr. Google was like, this is something they might do. And I was like, okay. And then when they were like, we don't drill anymore, we use this Bernie thing. I was like, all right, that seems fine. And then she was like, are you okay with the med student doing it? And I was like, yeah, sure. And you know, this is part of me being a nice guy. I'm not always nice, but I think I'm pretty nice and accommodating. And I was, you know, years and years ago, I read a book called Complications by Atul Gawande, Dr. Atul Gawande. And he was talking about how one of the complicated things in medicine is he's like, look, when someone goes in for a procedure, everybody wants the best, right? Nobody is signing up for a surgery and is like, well, you know, give me someone's got to cut their teeth on it, right? Might as well be on me. Everybody's like, everybody acknowledges that you need people to learn how to do this shit and to study with, you know, people who are good at it. But also that nobody wants to be that person. And he was like, that's totally makes sense. It's totally natural, but it's just the fact of the matter. So, you know, when she was like, can he do this? I was like, sure. Because, you know, I was like, well, it's not exactly my preference. But also I was like, I mean, how many of these could she have done? It's not like she's probably done 50 of them. And also just sort of felt like this seems like something that you can't really screw up that bad. Because I was like, I mean, if he fucks it up, he burns my toe a little bit, which has already got a fracture in it. And the nail is, you know, going to die. And what, you know what I mean? Like, eh. The consequences for a screw up didn't seem that bad. So I was like, yeah, sure. So she's like, can you do it? I say, sure. And then she's like, are you sure? Which that, and she was looking at me in a very serious way, which made me be like, well, you know, in my head, I'm like, I was sure, but now that you're like, are you sure? I'm less sure than I was. Cause like, should I, is there, do you have faith in this med student? Are you like concerned about his abilities? So then, they prop my foot up and he's got the tool. And so she's watching him do it and he's like gonna basically, it's like piercing my nail and he's holding it up. He's holding it like a pen and she's like, no, you got to do it straight up and down. Don't hold it at an angle, just straight up and straight through. And he's like, okay. So he does it and doesn't quite go through. He does it again. This is not painful. And then they kind of look at it and then she takes the pen and does it again and then gets through and yeah, blood starts coming out. So, you know, and she's like, how was it? Did it hurt? And I was like, no, it was fine. And you know, I it was a little, but nothing, nothing to cry about. And so they were leaving the room and I was like, hey, good job, man. You did it. Yeah, and I was trying to be nice to everybody who came in, and like the guy who cleaned my foot, I was like, thanks for cleaning my foot. You know, I appreciate that. And like the x-ray lady, just chatting with her. But yeah, so then basically, then two more people, two nurses came in to like wrap my foot up. And, you know, the one was like wrapping it up and she's like, actually, I think I need to clean this a little more because it was still bleeding this whole time. And so she cleaned it up and then she was wrapping it up. And the other nurse was telling me she had broken her toe like a year ago. And I was like, how did you do yours? Was yours in the weight room as well? And she was like, no, I was carrying my dog down the stairs and then I kind of tripped. And she's like, I was trying to save the dog, you know, and not injure the dog. So I ended up falling in a weird way and busting my foot. And I was like, well, was the dog okay? Did you save the dog? And she's like, I did. And I was like, well, then you're a true hero. So there you go. They gave me a wooden shoe. It's kind of like a dad sandal, but the bottom is very thick and made of just pure wood. And for some ill-advised reason, you know, the part your foot rests on, the bottom of the shoe, is white. So, it's covered in blood at this point. And it's kind of a spongy material, so I don't know if there's any hope of reversing that. So I go home. They're like, keep it elevated, do whatever, and, wear this shoe. I wore it for one night. So it puts your foot in this position where I think everybody's experienced this, where you get those really bad calf cramps in the night. You know what I mean? And it's just like the worst pain. And then it's tight, like a lot of the next day or something. And this shoe was putting me in a position where I got like multiple in the night. And usually when I get them, I can, you know, flatten my foot and that makes it go away almost immediately. But I couldn't do it with this shoe on. So I was like, well, if I don't have to wear this, I'm not going to. So I stopped wearing it. But, you know, it feels okay. I'm doing okay. I'm on the mend. Still hurts a little, but it's not dire. Now, they also gave me, so they were like, we're going to give you a referral to a orthopedist. So you can go in and they can make sure everything's healing good or whatever. And I was like, great. And they were like, call tomorrow because, their schedules fill up and whatever. And I was like, great. So I call the next day, I call the orthopedist's office and I was like, I have a referral to Dr. So-and-so. And they were like, oh, okay, what happened? And I was like, well, I was in the ER last night because I dropped a weight plate on my toe. And she was like, uh-huh. And so, and I was like, and they think I fractured the smallest bone on the end of the toe. And I guess I'm just supposed to go in and see if everything's okay. And she's like, okay, well, the doctor they referred you to is a spine doctor. So I'm going to put you over to this other doctor. And I was like, oh yeah, well, I'm glad that, you know, glad I'm going where I am instead of to him. And she's like, yep, that's a good thing. So, you know, when I called in, obviously what was going on is she was like, how is this going to get to a spinal injury from a toe injury? And I was like, oh, it's not. Lucky for me, it's not. So, and then she's like, okay, so we can get you in on Monday. And I was like, well, I don't know if I need to come in or not at all, but I definitely don't know if I need to come in that soon just because if they're supposed to look at how it's healing or something, how much are they going to know at that? You know what I mean? Like, what's going to happen by Monday? She was like, okay, well, let's make you an appointment for another week from Monday and you can come in. And she's like, and if you need to cancel it, you can. And I was like, great. So I decided, you know, things seem okay, but I'm just going to go ahead and keep the appointment because fuck it, why not, I guess. Also, I guess because, you know, the doctor's a podiatrist, so I figure they'll know like what I should do from here. So while I was in the ER, I also asked weightlifting questions. Basically, I was like, so what can I do on this? Like, can I? And I was like, if I went back to the gym and I was lifting weights, And the one doctor was like, well, you can do that. She's like, if as long as you're flat footed, you should be fine. She was like, you know, I just think if you're doing that, it's going to be throbbing. And I was like, okay, but I'm not going to like damage it by doing that. I'm not going to turn this bone fracture into powdered bone or something. And she's like, no, you can't really do much to it, you know, as long as you're in a shoe and whatever. And I was like, okay. But I did want to check that with the podiatrist as well. Just be like, should I be like walking on it? Should I be like absolutely not walking on it? You know what I mean? Like, what should I do? But so that was Thursday night. Saturday, I did like kind of a late weightlifting session. And then Sunday, I felt kind of like shit. Oh, that was another thing. They were like, well, these tend to get infected because, you know, your foot is not exactly the cleanest environment usually. And they were like, we used to always just give people antibiotics just as kind of like a, you know, what do you call it? Precautionary measure, prophylactic, if you will. But we don't do that anymore. So they were like, so just watch for signs of infection. And if you do get an infection, get some antibiotics. And I was like, okay. I just, you know, I kind of understand the general idea of like they used to prescribe them for everything. And then they're like, oh, my God, now stuff's becoming resistant to it. But also I'm like, does that really seem like a good idea? Like, let's just wait and see if you get an infection. I don't know. You know, and for me, I was like, well, I mean, if I just took them and I, you know, didn't get an infection that way, that seems fine. It doesn't seem harmful to me, whatever. So Saturday, I did a weightlifting session on just to kind of get the kinks out and whatever and just kind of see. I was like, can I put a shoe on? Can I lift weights? Is it painful? And I was like, it was fine. So then Monday rolls around and I decided to go for it. Go for my 1,000-pound club and I nailed it. I blew through the wall. And, you know, okay, I know it sounds weird to do that and like obsessive or something, but here's the thing. I was like, well, I don't really want to train on this toe if I don't have to. It seems like the fewer repetitions I do on this toe, the better. And also, I was like, you know, I was debating after my session on Thursday, whether or not I'd hurt my toe. I was like, maybe I should go for it. And, you know, now since I'd hurt the toe, I'd had a couple extra days rest. And I was like, you know, I think I should just go for it. Like, I think I should just try it. And because then if I don't hit it also, I was like, well, then I can kind of rest, try and recover my toe, rehab my toe, and, you know, get back under the bar, but maybe take a little time of not doing this. You know what I mean? Or whatever. But I did it. I successed. It was great. I took some pictures of the loaded barbell, but I didn't really want to like put those up or anything. And Poonmaster Flex was like, do you want me to take pictures or like video or something? And I was like, no, because I really did want... you know, in times in my life, I've felt the everything is content sort of thing and was like, I want this to be my thing that's for me. Because really, like, when you do stuff, it's funny when you do stuff. And, like, weightlifting makes it a very easy thing to examine. Because it's like, if you do a squat and you video it and you put that video online, you'll get either... people are like, hey, nice job, but you'll get a lot of like form critiques or, you know, whatever. And I was just like, I don't want that and I don't care. And also it's like people don't recognize that this is like a 3-year struggle for me. And, you know, I kind of understand people who hate reviews of their books. Because that's how they feel. They're like, I struggled for years to put this into print and I finally got there or whatever. And then some asshole just treats it like it was, you know, something I tossed off and didn't give a shit about. And I give very much of a shit about it. And I get that. That's hard. That is a hard thing to live through and to deal with. At the same time, I feel like, you know, something like a book That's part of the process, right? Like, I write a book and it's for consumption of other people. That's, I think the process isn't really complete unless other people read it. And maybe that's a not the right way to look at these things, but that's how I feel. Like, I want other people to read it and enjoy it. And maybe they won't enjoy it, but, you know, that's okay. But, like, my personal fitness goals aren't really something that I'm like, I'm doing this for public consumption. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not something I'm doing so that people can praise or critique it. It's something I'm doing because I wanted to do something that was hard for me. And it was hard for me. And, like, I just didn't really want to hear things like a 340 squat's not that much. Because it's not. It's not, like, a crazy amount of weight. And, you know, if you look online for these things, it's like, well, 1,000-pound club is kind of the line where people cross it. And that's when they start getting serious. You know what I mean? So, like, for an average person, it's big. But for a person who's really into strength training, it's not huge. But for me personally, it was huge. And I wanted it to stay huge for me. Or as we've started calling it in this house, puge. Because that's when Peter is huge. But, you know, it was a huge accomplishment for me. And I wanted it to stay that way. And I just felt like overdoing talking about it or whatever and turning it into content cheapened it. Whereas, like, stuff like, you know, this podcast or writing or, you know, video or whatever, I feel like putting it out for the public is part of the process. And it's part of the fun for me, honestly. Like, I, having grown up, you know, like in the 80s and 90s, it's still amazing to me that I can just choose to put out a book and it's available internationally, you know, within 24 hours. Or, like, I can put a video up online that anyone can see and I don't have to pay anything for that. Like, these are all still amazing to me and, like, fascinating and life enriching. So I think that for most of the things I do, that's part of it. You know what I mean? It is a part of, like, what I enjoy in the process is other people enjoying it. And, you know, there are other assholes who don't enjoy it and they're objectively wrong and bad people, but, like, whatever. They don't bother me that much. I think it would bother me if people, you know, interpreted this a certain way. Or, you know, I would just kind of be like, why don't you mind your own fucking business? And maybe that's part of it too, is I feel, you know, when someone reads my book, such as Read a Poem, Eat a Donut, available on Amazon, I feel like, well, they've invested some money, they've invested some time, so, you know, they're entitled to an opinion on it. They're entitled to, at the very least, an opinion on whether or not this was a good use of their time. And I think that's, like, totally fair. And if someone feels like it wasn't a good use of their time, I think it's very fair for them to say so. I don't think that me achieving a weightlifting goal is up for debate on someone else on whether or not it was a good use of their time to know that I had done that. Because it's like, well, you're literally watching, like, what, a 15-second clip of me doing three lifts. And it's like, I mean, fuck off. Like, whatever. So anyway, but in a way, I've turned it into content now, I guess. But it was more about the story of the smash toe and how this kind of all swirled into that. And, you know, I said it was going to come full circle, and the full circle is this. I was like, you know, sometimes on this show, especially lately, because, like, I work about half time from home. I don't really go out and do much these days. So, you know, sometimes I'm like, what am I going to talk about this time? I don't really have, you know, my life has not been rife with incident. This happens to a lot of podcasts. I mean, I think it's especially true of podcasts where the people are, like, not in touch with a reality that anyone else can identify with, where it's like, I think celebrity and comedian podcasts can be this way. And I think they need a stronger theme because it's like, well, you know, I can't really identify with your life or your lifestyle very much. So like, if you have a strong thing that you're doing that kind of directs the show, that helps. But I'm not really interested in hearing everybody's thoughts on stand-up comedy or whatever. But when you have a show like mine, which is barely a show, but also it's really just a personal project. You know what I mean? There's no guiding force other than just kind of my whims or whatever, I guess. So it's helpful for me when something happens in my life. And like one of the things I do like about this show is that when something bad is happening, I usually do think about it like, well, how am I going to talk about this on the show? You know what I mean? Or like, I think about it like, well, on the plus, at least I'll be able to talk about it on the show. And it should be interesting to talk about because something really bad or something really good is interesting to talk about. Just having another average day is not very interesting to talk about for the most part. So I had something bad happen. And, you know, it got me thinking because, you know, I was thinking, oh, maybe I should smash my toe every time before I deadlift because then the pain's not so bad. And then just today I was like, well, that's what I'm going to talk about on the podcast. And I was like, oh, maybe that's what I should talk about on the podcast. And I was like, maybe I should, you know, get more injuries so I have something to talk about. And then I was like, I just picturing myself, you know, completely battered and missing a bunch of chunks out of my body and being like, this is episode 700 and, you know, I'm on death's door because I've, you know, this is the only way I could think to generate content. The only way I can have something to talk about is if I've injured myself terribly. I was like, what a life that would be. What a wonderful, wonderful way to live your life. It kind of reminded me of, I had this idea for a short story. It was about an uncle who came to Thanksgiving every year. So one year he doesn't have kids, but you know, he's a beloved funcle, as we call him, fun uncle. And every year he comes to Thanksgiving. And so one year he accidentally slipped and fell. And you know, it was like a spectacular fall. And everybody kind of was reminiscing about it. And like one of his brother's kids drew a picture of it, you know what I mean? And stuff like that. So then this uncle realized that like he was making a wonderful experience for everybody by, you know, doing these stunts. So then the next year he comes back with a stunt that's, you know, even bigger, and he kind of keeps escalating his stunts. But then, you know, they do get to the point where he's like getting legitimately hurt and he's aging, you know, and all this stuff. But it's like he's kind of clowning for the entertainment and satisfaction of others. And he has to keep escalating and it kind of gets to a dark place. So, you know, that's what that was reminding me of. So, you know, I don't plan to do that, but I guess if I get injured, you'll probably hear about it again. I'm sorry if this was like, you know, hearing about this was making you cringe or something, but I mean, I don't think my details were super graphic or anything. I don't know. I know people are weird about like finger and toenail stuff, but I don't know. Get over. You're fine. Your toes are fine. All right. So calm down. That's my story of my injury, but also my triumph. It was kind of nice too. Poonmaster Flex was very proud of me and that was a nice feeling, but she was also like, do you remember that episode of The Office? There's an episode of The Office that always makes me tear up a little bit, and it's the dumbest thing, but it's this episode where Kevin is... So the other businesses have some construction going on in the office park, and all the construction people are parking in the parking lot, so the regular office people have to park several blocks away. And Kevin is, you know, hates it, and he's out of shape, and he gets all sweaty getting into the office and stuff, and is just miserable. So he calls a meeting together and is like, you know, begging for the parking spaces back or whatever. And the other office owners who are doing the construction are just like, yeah, fine. Like, whatever. And so then the whole time you're like, oh, this is kind of silly. And it's kind of like, it's kind of like an extended fat joke about Kevin. But then what happens is, so they say, okay, fine, you can have your parking spaces back. And so then they're doing like the talking head interview with Kevin. And he's like, you know, things have been really hard because my fiance left me and things haven't been good at home. And it's just nice to win one once in a while. And that always makes me tear up because it's like this whole time you kind of think that this show is a big fat joke. But really, it's like he's not passionate about this because he's a fat guy and doesn't want to walk. He's passionate about this because it's like, you know, I'm not winning anywhere. You know what I mean? Every aspect of my life has gone wrong. And so then I can totally identify with the idea of like things aren't in my control and things are going wrong, but this is a place where I can have control. And if I can secure a victory here, it feels like if I can make this work, then maybe I can make something else work. You know what I mean? Maybe I can build some momentum and get some wins. And I think that's how I felt about this, about hitting that 1,000 pounds was like, I smashed my toe. I've hurt my hamstring a couple times. I put on weight and Poonmaster Flex has to wear earplugs to bed because I snore and, you know, all this stuff. And I'm like, it feels good to have a victory. It feels really good. So there you go. That's my, I won one. And that's what Poonmaster Flex brought up. She's like, this is like your Kevin. It feels good to win one. And I was like, it does. It really does. So there you go. I'm leaving you on a happy note. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know what to expect from our next episode. We'll see you then. We'll talk to you soon.